The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.
On the Climate Action Hub, you'll find so many resources for climate campaigns, ranging from glossaries, resource banks, how-to articles, videos and webinars, and podcasts. And today we present another podcast dedicated to climate action, and this time we're focusing on campaigning. Campaigning is an essential tool for charities, but campaigning, just speaking out, is not always that simple. Many charities face public backlash, fear of political backlash, fear of breaking the rules, fear of losing funding, and a lot more. There are a lot of consequences, so it's not really as simple as it sounds. You can't just campaign. So today we're going to have a kind of round table discussion of sorts, relying on the expertise of three people who publish content on the Climate Action Hub, the three people who should know what they're talking about. They may not. It should be caveated. We have Josie Sparling, our wonderful content assistant, and Laura Stanley, our slightly less wonderful content writer. And last and certainly least, we have me, the content editor. So yeah, we're not going to have simple question and answer. We're just going to have a bit of a roundtable discussion about some of the things that we think are important. And we're going to start off by talking about the purpose of charity campaigns and the purpose of campaigning for charities. And I'm going to turn to Josie to start, if you want to crack on.
So in terms of the purpose of campaigning for charities, the UK Charity Commission's guidance is that all campaigning must further your charity's purpose. So the purpose for campaigning for charities is to further their own purpose. Just a disclaimer that if you're in the UK, you should check the government guidance on campaigning and political activity for charities, which will be linked in the blurb of this podcast, before engaging in campaigning or political activity. But just to go into the different types of campaigning, the first kind is political activity. So, for example, trying to influence policies or decisions by governments, public bodies, and international organisations. The second type is educating the public and raising awareness. And the third type is making sure that existing policies and laws are followed without seeking to change them. And the government guidance also notes that political activity can't be a charity's sole purpose for existing, and that charities must remain independent and not give support to a political party. So yeah, maybe hand over to Laura.
I just think it's really interesting that charities are obviously no strangers to campaigning, like obviously, but that they're not allowed to affiliate with political parties. So like you can lobby the existing government, you can ask MPs to, I think you can work with MPs who have interests in your local area and things like that, but you can't actually have an affiliation. I think that's really interesting, and it's obviously a difficult line to tread. I think Josie's right with the disclaimer on making sure that we're like not advocating too hard on one side, but and it's worth like checking out that guidance definitely. But I think with the climate it's interesting for the purpose of campaigning, just because I think you can I think most charities can link the climate to their purpose in terms of it will affect everyone. It's going to affect local communities. It's going to affect humanitarian aid. It already is affecting humanitarian aid and migration. And so I think there's an interesting angle in terms of, specifically campaigning on the climate. What do you think, Johan?
This passing is too formal. I think to Josie's point, I think there's a vagueness in the legislation, which I think you can't really help but see. Your cause can't be directly aligned with the political party.
Yeah.
When you think of climate change particularly, you think, okay, well, it seems like an advocacy for particular political parties, because we all know particular political parties base their entire sort of, reason for, as you know, the Green Party is the logical one to sort of reference. So it really isn't clean cut. And I think one thing that I saw on one of the sort of charity bodies was that actually you should be more cautious around election times and stuff like that, which is actually, I mean, super, quite strange really. So all those things are worth considering. But broadly, I think just don't be outwardly political in the sense of advocating for a specific party, and just make sure it's somehow directed to your mission. And then the rest is vague enough that I don't think you would,
I mean, I'm not going to say go for it, but I don't think you'd be particularly liable legally. But yeah, so I think a lot of that's important. I mean, you can work with politicians. Politicians work on causes and they work with charities. There's a long history of a relationship between the public sector.
And we
sector.
Need them to, right?
Because yeah, of course. Need- and that's part of it. I mean, part of a campaign would be lobbying your local politicians. I mean, the whole, we have published content on how to lobby your MPs on climate change and how to make them support particular issues, and like local issues are super important too. So yeah, I mean, all of that I think is quite important. And in terms of purposes beyond that, I think that's where we could maybe go to next. I mean, that's covered the strict like sort of guidance that the government has. And realistically, like Josie said, you need to read that when you're, you need to be familiar with that really. I mean, more so than we are probably. But the other purposes, stuff like, you know, campaigning is simply just activities in a lot of ways. It's just one, to broadly sum it up, is activities to influence policy or to influence the practices of public bodies and individuals generally. So any number of campaigns just aim to mobilize a lot of the time and get people on board in ways and through different means, you know. So it could be education, it could be purely education, or it could be motivating further action and leading to lasting change. And I'd be like a first step in engagement. I mean, a lot of people talk about like campaigns in terms of engagement, like the circle of engagement. There's loads of theories of engagement, but I think looking at raising awareness would be your first step. And then you need to, I guess the second purpose of a campaign would typically be to get people to engage further than awareness. And I think the issue here is if you look at me as an individual, I know of a lot of social problems, not because I'm clever or anything, but just because they're so evident, you know, like you see them on your day-to-day basis. But more importantly, they're shown to you by 100 different campaigns. So one of the things that a campaign does, a successful campaign does, is it gives people a sense of urgency and need so that they act upon the information as opposed to just receiving it. So a good example is, you know, you could balance, you know, the million different health issues we currently face in this country. All of them I know are severe. A lot of them are severe. A lot of them are really important, but you sort of tend to care about some that have, for some reason, generated an emotional reaction from you. And that may be a personal thing, or it may just be that the marketing or the campaign has been so successful. Now, so there's like, is this creating an urgency or need or convincing people to act on it? And with climate change, that's really interesting because it's not very good at that, because climate change isn't very apparent in the immediacy of, like, for example, you know, the book is Slow Violence, the Rob Nixon book, and it talks about the slow violence of climate change and how they really fail sometimes to cut through. And I think that's super important, because climate change, one of the things about a campaign in terms of climate action is you need to cut through the noise. You need to make yourself seem, you need to make climate change seem as urgent as it is, even though it often doesn't feel like that way because of the sort of slow violence. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think it's really interesting. I find raising awareness itself, really interesting, because I think there are some campaigns where I'm like, that's not enough. But I think, as you said, raising awareness, especially in terms of climate change, is so important, because the stuff that I have learned doing our climate action campaign that I would never have known before, that has changed my behavior. And so that has helped people take the next step. So I think it's really easy to dismiss the raising awareness stage, which I have done myself. And actually, I think it's a really important place to start. And but it is about also thinking about the next step, about what action will that then lead to, and always thinking about a call to action and always adding one. Because I think if the minute you, as much as I think it is really important on its own, I think if you leave it there, then what was it for? Then that purpose has not been met, has it?
Yeah, so I think the thing about cutting through the noise is interesting. And I think a charity that's done a good job of this is the Climate Coalition. They have an annual Show the Love campaign, which in 2014, Climate Outreach did some research for them. Climate Outreach is also another charity that does research about how to communicate about climate change. And they produced this advertising campaign, or advertising campaign about tackling climate change. And the approach was to show normal people talking about things they loved that they didn't want to lose, which was really effective. And I think they measured it and it was all very effective. So
what did people love?
things like, oh, I can't remember now, like football and just like, right. I can't remember a lot, maybe chocolate, just like random things that they didn't, that they loved, spending time with their family and stuff like that. So yeah.
It was weird, like with the extinction stuff, you know, with climate, that's one thing that actually does get to people. There was a thing on the, they showed 5 episodes of the David Attenborough thing and they didn't show the 6th because it referenced how much extinction. So it was only on iPlayer or something like this. I don't remember. It was on, I saw it on Gogglebox, if I'm being honest. It was, anyway, in this, it was saying, but the extinction thing, it was interesting because people on Gogglebox were saying how it cuts through the noise.
Yeah.
And what it does is extinction is this one, and I've noticed this in my reading, that's the one fundamental thing that really shocks you.
Yeah.
Because when you find it was something like, you know, 50% of birds are under threat of extinction. And it just, something just reminded me that Josie said, when there's the things you love from your past, it's a really quite heartbreaking thing with climate change that the birds that I used to see, my children might not see, like, you know, in the future, or great grandchildren will not have access to the same wildlife, the same ecosystems and the same fish, you know, or anything like that. I think these are the sort of things you do see a little bit. And that's what I think an effective climate campaign is just kind of raising earnest, you know, you don't deviate from the facts. You raise real, genuine concerns, and there's so many of them, but you do it so in a way that draws that emotive reaction.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's like, there's a big fact in our facts about climate change, about the extinctions that are happening even now. Mm. And it's really scary. And I think it's partially because when we think of extinctions, we think of like the dodo, which is really long ago and feels not relevant to our lives at all. But the idea that like animals that we're seeing right now being gone, it's really scary because it doesn't feel like it should be happening, but it is literally happening. And yeah, to see it on, I think David Attenborough is obviously so good at
conveying
exactly. And it's a matter of, I think it's really, the Gogglebox example itself is really interesting because that's cut through in a place into people's living rooms. They have not sought that out other than wanting to watch David Attenborough documentary, and he is like obviously super popular beyond climate activism. But I think that sort of speaks to the climate, people being interested in the climate anyway. So there was research that shows from the climate outreach charity that shows that the vast majority of people in the UK are worried about climate change. So it's not something like, as much as people, it doesn't sound like it's urgent, I think it is in the background of everyone's minds. It's just about reaching them in the places that they are to make them think about it in the, like, yeah, because it needs to be thought about in every day, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's helping people understand how it relates to them personally and not feel like it's just happening elsewhere and it's going to be in the future. Like, it's now and it's you. Like, and helping people kind of come to terms with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting with some other charity campaigns that we've sort of noticed around that these trends that we're mentioning, the emotive, the physical was something you brought up last time. Was that to do with this? It was, wasn't it? So the physical as well. What can you elaborate on that?
So I was talking about with technology, how don't forget that there's a physical process that goes along with production, using it and then throwing it away. So throughout every product's lifetime, there's physical processes that are happening that you might not know or think about.
Yeah, I think it's harking back to that, the physical repercussions and sort of like, I mean, so much of climate change discourse feels abstract, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that you sort of, it creates a barrier between yourself and what's going on because you are, it's like a psychic numbing because you're able to avoid the repercussions, the physical repercussions of your actions, which is, I mean, that's pretty normal in everyday life anyway, but it's particularly, you know, it happens a lot more in the current age than it did in the past when, you know, like for example, the way you ate the meal on your table and everything like that, you went out and picked the fruit or picked, you know, you don't do that now. You're abstracted from what you consume and you're so abstracted from everything. I mean, you're in the Shakespearean times, you would go to the theater and you would watch live theater. Now you have no idea how these TV shows are produced, but there's thousands of them on Netflix or Apple TV or whatever of the 12 different streaming services you opt for. So back to the campaigns though, that was a deviation that made it made some sense. And the point was that I think the campaigns, a lot of the ones I've noticed, for example, they are physical and they take you away from the, they bring you back from the abstraction to the physical. And the other thing is they have an emotive. So one I really liked was the charity water one. We've mentioned it a few times, but so it's, there's basic, the tagline is there's 771 million people or more than 771 million people lacking basic access to clean and safe drinking water. And they basically had a punchy Instagram campaign for World Water Day, which again brought you back from the abstraction. So it was called The True Colors of Dirty Water, and it was supporting their mission to provide clean water to people across the world. And so it showed different colors of water and asked you to choose which one. And then when you clicked through, it brought you to the story of the individual who would have to drink that water or use that water in everyday life. And so it was kind of a weird one where you were almost forced to confront your own, what was happening in real terms, like a goose, not like a Goosebumps book, that's trivializing it a bit, but you know, you were interacting with the sort of the horrors of that. That's not exactly climate based, but you can see that obviously the tangible is made tangible. I think it's the intangible is made tangible.
That really reminds me of, I always talk about this campaign as well, but a few years ago, the British Heart Foundation did a campaign on Twitter where it was a very much choose your own adventure sort of style. And you would have to go through these different steps on the, like choose a different option on each of these tweets. And at the end, it would be like whether you lived or whether you survived a heart attack or whether you saved someone or, and it would be, and then the end, it would be the call to action would essentially be this many people die from heart attacks every day. Here's how you can, and I think it referred you to CPR training, which I think is a really interesting way of making it like that. So you feel like you've lived, you've been actively making decisions and actively participating in this campaign. And then you're like, okay, I actually need to address this now. And it gives you the tools to then go and address it, which I think is really interesting. Very similar.
That's really interesting. A campaign that I think is interesting is the Attack on Nature campaign that the RSPB National Trust, Woodland Trust and the Wildlife Trust all collaborated on in response to Liz Truss's mini budget in September 2022, which proposed lifting some environmental protections and laws. They organised a letter writing campaign to MPs to oppose these plans over social media, and over 100,000 letters were written. And then the plans were announced. It was announced that the plans weren't going to be going ahead after Liz Truss resigned. And the RSPB now has an online Action for Nature toolkit on their website, so you can continue to support those efforts, even though the initial campaign kind of achieved its goal, I suppose, but it's still relevant to defend nature in the UK, even beyond that one instance, I guess.
I think that's a big part of what I actually wrote down in my, like, how they've used digital technology to campaign. I think giving people the tools to campaign is so important. So I think it came out in one of the sessions from the Be More Digital conference in 2022, where I think it was Mind were talking about how they had set up their Gaming for Good strategy. And they had asked gamers what they actually need from Mind to help them to be able to raise money for them. And it wasn't how to set up a fundraiser or how to do what they already know how to do. It was how to talk about mental health with their followers, because that was something they'd not done before. And, you know, it can be a tricky subject. So I think that charities are experts in certain ways. And I think we can share that expertise for marketing and communications and provide that consistency, like messaging guides and brand guidelines. And it's sort of about giving people then the tools to then go and do their own thing. I think that's like the letter writing campaign. Look how effective that was. I think that's really clever. And there's a really good climate toolkit that you can get from Community First Yorkshire, I think. And or you could just use, you know, look at it as a template of what sort of a good, I think it's really helpful. It provides community groups in Yorkshire with the tools that they need to create an environmental policy, for example. Like, it has a template there that people can use. And I just think that's a really exciting way to empower people.
The Woodland Trust is another really good example of a charity who does that. They have how-to guides on their website for local communities about how to set up a local group, arrange a community meeting, and object to planning applications in their local area. So it helps local communities kind of take matters into their own hands in line with the charity's goals and values, I suppose.
That's so good. Mm. I love that.
And there's loads of like, there's loads of other campaigns that I think we can mention that aren't, I mean, charity-led ones are typically about empowering, I think, and about giving people tools. There's a lot more giving people tools, which is obviously a really progressive thing. But I think the individual campaigns and business campaigns or collaborative campaigns between charities and businesses typically go for, they're typically more about raising awareness. And there's reasons for that that aren't always great, i.e. for businesses, they want more people knowing their brand. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it's not pure as perhaps a charity campaign. But the individual campaigns, I think a lot of those are quite interesting, like the Canadian artist Von Wong created a huge plastic sculpture from reclaimed plastic to break the record for the largest drinking straw sculpture in Ho Chi Minh City, or supported in Ho Chi Minh City. The only reason I mention that, obviously this is very different from what you two have mentioned, but I think it's about this big statement campaign things. And that's another part of campaigning. It's valuable in itself because it's raising. And I think part of me wants to sort of highlight the fact that a lot of these, this is a bit off topic, but a lot of these depend on creativity. So if you take sort of stuff like tax campaigners, this is a off topic, as you might have guessed, but a lot of like, I can't remember the tax campaigners, but it was about corporation tax and tax evasion. There was a campaign group and they used to do really creative things. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but they used to do really creative things about a really dull subject, tax. No one really wants to do tax, but they did things like they served bills to people, headquarters who weren't paying taxes, and made these big statements.
I remember that.
Do you remember it? I can't remember their name.
No, I can't, but I remember the campaign.
Yeah. Anyway, they had all these creative solutions. Now the point to take from that, and we can put them on a resource below or something, but the point to take was that they were taking what is a dull subject and a subject that was very difficult to get people passionate about. And again, tax evasion, for example, is not something you're going to see the immediacy of. Mm. It's a form of sort of, it's slow again, you know, it's like you don't see it, but it the way it manifests is a lack of hospital beds in 5-10 years, or, you know, a few less textbooks in a classroom or you know, like a pothole on a road. It's not something that you can really quickly quantify or translate. So I think the idea is to somehow get these things that don't seem that pressing or immediate into the public mind.
Yeah.
And that's what this big straw sculpture does, or these other campaigns you've seen. They're typically more activist-led campaigns, because they do, I mean, Extinction Rebellion are doing a similar thing now. They're making, and while they are a controversial group in terms of their tactics, because a lot of people are annoyed, I mean, and they've certainly, in my view, made some errors, but the point is they get people talking. Yeah. And that is the, and I'm not suggesting you go out and sit in roads, by the way, but I am suggesting that the exposure is
it's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. It is if it's still about optics and exposure, but at the same time, creating that conversation about climate change is essential. And I think in years to come, we'll probably look upon a lot of actions that seem quite controversial and probably have a nicer view of it.
Yeah.
That's about as far as I'm allowed to go legally, I think.
I think it's about communicating what you want to communicate in as few words as possible, though. Mm. And so I'm always making sure it comes back to your reasons why, because I think if any protest group has aired, it's probably because they've targeted the wrong people. Mm. I'm thinking of perhaps like climate activists who were stopping public transport when
you're thinking of Canning Town.
Yeah, I'm thinking of
Canning Town as well.
And also I remember there was something with soup involved at one point. And when I heard the explanation for why it had happened, I was like, that makes sense. But it wasn't initially clear.
You mean the National Gallery stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was about how like you care so much about this portrait, but this portrait will be gone when the world floods. And I think, and also they knew, you know, that portrait is covered in glass. They knew that portrait was not going to get, it's not a portrait, it's a picture, but you know what I mean? And it's not going to get, and I thought these reasons were really interesting.
It wasn't conveyed.
It's not clear.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's hard
because these are two things that annoy me. And like the Canning Town one was particularly frustrating, because it's worth mentioning that Extinction Rebellion is a decentralized organization. So people act on its behalf, and they don't have as far as I know, last time I read about them, they were decentralized, and i.e. they don't have anyone to answer to. There's no chains of accountability. It's non-hierarchical and so on and so forth. So that means that as under the name of Extinction Rebellion, activists can go out and stand on a train, which is environmentally friendly, by the way, compared to other forms of transport, which was kind of a frustrating point, and go and help, go to a particularly working class area of East London, Canning Town, and prevent people from going home.
Yeah.
That, to me, logically, is not going to get you loads of followers. I certainly found it really annoying, because I was going, this just isn't who you should be going for. Yeah. I mean, these people are coming home after a hard day's work, like, and they're not the problem. They're certainly, I mean, maybe some of them really love fossil fuels or something. I don't know. I don't know who they were, but the point is optics, as well as exposure. You can get a lot of exposure for a bad optic, and that's not a good thing.
No.
But you basically just want to be creative, but be clever about it. And a lot of what Extinction Rebellion do does play quite well with its audience and people who would probably be sympathetic to them.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're getting a bit too into the details.
I think it's, yeah, I know. I just to like add and like wrap it up, really, that whole like section,
the soup
it's just
stuff.
That it's just, it's not a comment on what Extinction Rebellion does,
no.
Because like, do you and I do think they've been really good at elevating the conversation, but then, and they're not a charity, exactly. Yeah. And they are decentralized, as you said, but it's more about like the lessons we can learn from campaigns that we've seen in the public eye, and in fairness to them, we have seen them in the public eye, haven't we? And there are lessons to be learned, like make sure it's aligned to a strategy. If you don't want it to be decentralized, even as a charity, make sure you send out those messaging guides and send out those tools that people, so people know how to talk about it.
Charities,
like the RFPB's campaign.
Yeah.
Like that's streamlined, isn't it? So that's how they managed to get that letter writing campaign so effective, because they provided everyone the tools to send.
I just want to also just delineate between activist groups and charities. Obviously, they're very different, and activist groups are typically, they can be decentralized, and whereas charities are often beholden to, you know, certain principles, structures, and as we mentioned earlier, there's legislation in place that governs charities. Should we move on to the climate action campaign and talk about our campaign?
Oh, yeah. So have we learned a lot from this campaign, do you think?
I think I've learned some things. So in terms of like the purpose of the campaign, I would say it falls under the educating and raising awareness category for charities. And yeah, I think one thing we did that I think was really good, that I've learned that was really good, was to, in our planning stage, we broke up into themes, and we thought in some detail about what we were going to do. And I feel like that's been able to, because it's a year long campaign, I feel like we've got a lot of confidence from that and a momentum as well. And also, I think doing a survey has been really insightful, for that purpose of educating, raising awareness, because we're able to see where our audience is with sustainability and climate action. I don't know if anyone else has any.
Yeah. I mean, I think themes wise, that was Josie's idea, should be said. Yeah. We were going gung ho on all sorts. Me and Laura were not in the best place when we started, but it was.
Don't speak for yourself.
Laura was a shambles. Yeah, I think it's the themes have been so good, because I think when you actually, when it's just about educating and raising awareness, raising awareness does run the risk of just being like all encompassing, and almost anything counts.
Yes, exactly.
And I think we had a bit of that, and that was a lesson where we actually went a bit wrong. We kind of just like, anything is climate awareness, but really we want to teach a specific audience a specific thing. And we are hoping that they act upon what we're teaching and giving people the tools to sort of go forward. And I think it's also in the raising awareness thing is the challenge, because we are also doing that thing that we talked about earlier, where it's this kind of contrast between trying to raise stress urgency and we're finding that there isn't much, and yet in the survey it seems like there's a lot of urgency. a lot of people. I mean, almost not just a survey. You know, you talked about the stats earlier. Everyone's worried or very worried. Everyone seems to be, but no one seems to be doing much. Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, is the main challenge that we've noticed. And that, I guess, the key is, and I'll pass to you now, Laura, but the key is how you address that, how you get worried and anxious people to act on climate change without exacerbating that worry or anger.
Yeah. Well, I think it's particularly difficult when it comes to climate change because a lot of the stuff we can do is needs to be legislated. However, there are we've learned that individuals have a lot of power, like saving energy and stuff like that, that and actions that can be taken, and charities in particular have a lot of room. This is why we launched the campaign, and actually comes back to what I've learned later. Because I think charities can start asking questions in a way that perhaps individuals can't, because organizations can ask questions of their pension providers. I think I talk about pensions every single climate podcast. They can ask questions of all their suppliers, basically, and say, what are your environmental credentials? And please think about this because it's really important to us. They can lobby on specific things. So there's lots of pollution stuff that happens in London, I think. And I think that's a really good local example of the impacts of climate change. And so, yeah, I think that generally, I don't know what my point was. Insightful.
Insightful stuff there, Laura.
What was my point?
I don't know.
But yeah, I also think it's been really helpful to have the three reasons and to help us keep stay focused, because I think we've been focused quite early on, mostly because of the themes. I think that has really helped. But I think having that time to just come up with three reasons and always question what we're doing by those reasons, well, I do in my head, like that, it goes in for the decision-making, like, what are we actually trying to achieve here? So we came up with three reasons for the Climate Action Campaign, which were that charities exist for the public benefit, and the public benefit is not flooding and droughts and things from climate change. Digital is both the solution and the problem behind climate change. So obviously we advocate for charities using more digital because it can make them more efficient, more productive, fundraise more. It's a really good way of making your operations more effective, but also digital does have a carbon footprint and we need to address that. And also, again, if we can get people talking about the carbon footprint and sending one less email or asking their CRM system about what they're doing to help the environment, then that's a really great thing. And the final thing is that charities have a voice to lead on ethical issues, and they do, because they aren't political. So if a political party talks about environmental issues, it might be seen as partisan, but this is not a partisan issue. As I said at the start, I think it's 88% around that who are very concerned or very concerned about climate change. That's a huge chunk of the public, and it's like that was in 2019, so it's likely higher now. I think it was around 9 in 10 charities were concerned about it in our survey as well. So it's not a partisan issue, and it's not something that's, I don't know what the word is. It's not controversial as it might seem, because I think there is a vocal minority who make it seem controversial, but it's not all. So I think having those three reasons and always coming back to them, you might not know it from my rambling here, makes it seem more like, helps me keep it focused and know why we're doing it. And as long as we can justify that, I think it helps keep the campaign in my head on track. I think my other lesson is, and I think it comes from our early meetings in developing the campaign, is making time for spontaneous ideas, because some of our ideas have not been ones that we've thought of before the meeting. They've been ones that we thought of in the meeting. And I think making sure you have a lot of time to talk through stuff is really good. I think this is also something that me and Josie both found quite interesting at the 2023 conference. I know I mentioned the 2022 one, where one of the speakers said that finding like some of the most creative time is do nothing time, but people see that as unproductive. But yeah. I think that's really important when you're in your planning stages for a campaign.
So do nothing is
do nothing.
Okay.
Do nothing. Yeah. That's not what I said.
No, I know, but it was the grand, if we sum it all up. I think there's loads more to be learned. And I think one other thing was like the cyclical nature of it. So your campaign raises awareness, it convinces people to act, and then it helps them how to act, and then you have to raise further awareness as they upskill. Essentially, yeah. That's an ideal sort of engagement cycle that continues, and they get better and better, and then ultimately they transcend you as an organization, and then they teach you how to act, and probably wouldn't work like that. But, you know, like I think also another thing is we're trying to be diverse in our output. And I think diversity is really interesting for a campaign because the most successful campaigns historically have always been very diverse. They are nationwide campaigns. You know, you going back for some of the biggest social issues in history have been, you think of the amount of things they did, like lobbying, it was protest, it was letter writing, it was marketing, it was traditional marketing, digital marketing, boycotting, everything. So we obviously aren't running a political campaign in the same way, or we're not running a social campaign. We're running a campaign that's close to our cause, which is giving people tools. It's, you know, about raising awareness, but it still should have diversity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that people can take on board because we have webinars and we have podcasts and we have videos now, and we have a lot of written work. We have short form, we have long form, we have some interviews and so on and so forth. And I think it's about allowing people to have the tools through various means and various modes of consumption as well. So always think about, you know, your audience are not single people, they don't have single preferences, they're that all you know, universal preferences. That
no, I completely agree. I've got a really good example for this.
Well, buckle up.
I think it's about having, it's like having top funnel stuff and bottom funnel stuff, isn't it? Is that like how you describe it? Maybe funnel's the wrong word, but like top level. And so a really good charity, and then like identifying areas where you have impact and idea at like different audiences. So how you talk to MPs will be different to how you, or the tools you give to MPs are going to be different to the tools you give to like Laura Stanley. But Islamic Relief, it's a humanitarian aid charity. They've been doing a really good job, I think, of taking the lead on tackling climate change, both on a global and sort of local level. So some of their steps that they've taken, on their website, they have a whole section about how they're tackling climate change. And they've got some really high level stuff. So like becoming a founding member of the Muslim Climate Action Network, which is a network of Islamic faith inspired UK based NGOs working together to talk about climate change. They've also helped initiate the first Islamic declaration on climate change that works across 12 countries in 4 continents and stuff like that. But they've also done eco iftars in local communities to raise awareness of first-hand effects of climate change, such as the drought in East Africa and floods in Bangladesh. And it's to educate their supporters on how they can individually make a change. And I think that having that dual level of things, it sort of speaks to the diversity of what we're putting out. I just think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just meet your consumers.
Bottle box it.
Sorry, I was going to make a really interesting point, but now it's actually the best point I've ever made, but I've completely forgot it because of that outburst. Google box it.
Meet people where they are.
I mean, yeah. Don't make this.
I'm right. No, Google box it.
Start writing articles about this, please.
How to Google box it.
How to Google box it. Well, that was brilliant. Thank you, Laura, for Google boxing it. If that means ruining it. Anyway. That's all for us. That's our first roundtable conversation. And so we hope you enjoyed it. We will be having another one in a couple of weeks, and that'll be on AI in the charity sector, where we're going to talk about basically how you can use it, how you shouldn't use it at times, and the various risks and benefits and rewards and so on and so forth. So please join us for that. And we will see you then. Thank you, Josie. And thank you, Laura. And goodbye.
Thank you, Johan.
Thank you.